It's Friday on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin and Ailish. What's going on?
Not much.
You got anything new to share?
Turning the page on the World Cup, that's it. New to share?
Yeah. Oh, you got no mustache this morning.
I guess that's new to share.
I knew something was different.
I think it's throwing the vibe off, to be honest.
Okay. I'm shook to my core and recognize my
different.
Co-host.
It doesn't feel as... doesn't feel the same.
Is it a... like relieving feeling? Like, did you look in the mirror and be like, oh, finally?
No, I mean, I didn't rush to get it off. Well, I was kind of a little disappointed when it came off.
You didn't have to do that.
But like, I woke up and it was, it's at the point where you have to like brush it a little bit.
That's disgusting.
And it was like all going in different directions. So like, all right, it's time. this thing shouldn't be like capable of having a mind of its own.
Saw a lot of fresh face folks yesterday on my endeavor on the streetcar. Now I'm a streetcar gal.
Did you? Was it a strong presence from Movember this year?
I think I saw lots of stashes. But I will say I think mustaches were in over the last couple months. Thanks to Miles Teller from Top Gun. He really made that a hot topic. Anyone could wear a mustache. And like I think everybody jumped up 10 points. After watching Top Gun.
I mean, anyone could. I guess they have the reason to do it, but can they pull it off the same way? I don't think so. Exactly.
But there was a lot of stashes throughout November, and yesterday everybody looked prim and proper.
And we raised a decent amount of money.
We did.
Your page was just, you know,
page was
filling up by the end of it. A lot of the Fan Morning Show listeners go to you. They all went to your page for some reason. Like, I don't really understand that. But
well, you
anyway,
advertised yours
way.
Once, and you were 11 days late making
how
it,
long
if you
did
remember.
How many times did you advertise yours?
Well, I started when Movember started. You started 11 days late.
It was not 11 days late.
Seven.
This is a taxing job, okay?
You're like, I couldn't find time to make the page. Anyway, I raised $640. $640, thanks to everybody.
Yeah.
A lot of that was with Wake and Rake winnings.
We were over
1,000. You added to our pot of donation.
It wasn't the greatest Wake and Rake month in the history of the show.
It was not.
But there was still a decent amount of donations to be made. A great idea from you. I'll give you all the credit in the world.
Thank you.
Your ability to step up, not have to wear a mustache, but still got us over the $1,000 mark. So that's great
stuff.
Trying
to do my part.
You did.
I appreciate
I'll give you
it.
Credit, even though it's not coming back my way.
Yesterday, okay, it's not a competition. We did a great thing for Movember together.
Yes, we did.
Our show.
Yes, we did.
Successful.
Yeah.
We might have helped some bros in need. Yesterday, I thought, though, I woke up and I looked at my bet, which was Jason Robertson over 3.5 shots.
Mm.
And I saw that he scored a hat trick. And I thought, oh, no. What if he scored a hat trick on 3 shots? I mean, that would be the worst. The worst bet of all time. Like, just be beat down. And I looked, and another check mark for me.
A casual 7 shots. Not even a sweat. I'm sure he had that in the first period. I got to start. Okay, I'm taking it to the end with the World Cup. I will be betting the World Cup until I can't bet the World Cup. Because this is it's top of mind. It's about having fun. This is entertainment, not, okay, let's find the most obscure shot total at minus 180.
Are you criticizing my picks?
No. That was just a thing I could do. But I think everyone's into the World Cup right now, maybe less so after the result yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be entertained in the afternoon. I feel it more when I'm out there on an island with my only pick.
And everybody's watching the 10 a.m. game.
Yeah.
That you blow your bet, and then all day we sit around.
It was a tough day yesterday.
I wonder if people double down, though.
I love the bets.
Let's say your bet.
I did that yesterday.
Okay, your bet doesn't cash.
I know I'm going to be the only one here, so I bet.
You bet the other two.
The Bills and yours, and of course the Bills.
Josh Allen barely ran the ball.
No, it was too comfortable of a win for the Buffalo Bills.
He's just like, I'll just throw
it's
dimes.
A good thing for you.
I'll just throw dimes and make incredible passes.
Defense without Von Miller will just do its job.
Yeah, no sweat. Let's piss off Bill Belichick and Mac Jones and get out of there. Get out of town.
That was it.
On a short week.
Might be time to buy stock on the Buffalo Bills.
It's like nothing's
going. Prices dropped a little bit.
Yeah, whatevs,
Kansas City, the favorites. Might be time to get a Bills Super Bowl
It's like clockwork.
To sweat something for the next 2 months.
Next time they play, I'll be in attendance.
Will you? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you will. Wow. 10 days away.
I cannot wait.
And we have the most important question ever posed to Charles Davis later on.
He's coming in at 8, which is uncharacteristic of him because we have some other guests that we got to fit in early. And I got to wait till 8 a.m. to find out if Charles is calling Bills Jets.
And if he is, you have to scramble, get PR on the horn, make sure you get a field pass. You got a lot of work to do if he says, yes, it's Bills and
I
Jets.
I wonder if he knows already and he just didn't text in and he's just like, you know, waiting to tell me on the air.
Well, he said he would find out the Thursday before. So he might have got the news last night.
God, I hope so.
Or he doesn't have it yet. That would be very disappointing. It's going to be disappointing if he's not doing the game, too, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's a big chance for disappointment today.
Well, Justin, it's Friday.
Or a chance for absolute elation.
Elation
and
will
the
be
meeting,
the word.
The long-anticipated meeting between Ailish Forfar and Charles Davis.
You know that photo, I'll frame it.
Yeah.
I'll put it up here in the studio.
I know you will.
Charles and I.
It'll be like a little, like at your grandmother's house in the corner here. Every show will have to deal with it too.
Like,
JD Funk's podcast, they'll just like
JD
turn it down.
JD will be so jealous.
He'll just turn it down. He won't be able to do his show with that.
Yeah, he'll be
room.
Distracted.
But we'll have to do it.
He wishes. Speaking of disappointment. Wow, wow, wow.
Good segue.
Canada loses yesterday. The bookend that we didn't hope for.
That's your buzzword right now, eh?
No, bookend's a good word. Well, it makes sense. There's the start of the tournament, the middle, the meat, and then the bookend.
Couple buns.
And Canada loses 2-1 to Morocco to end their tournament, the World Cup. See you in 4 years on home field.
Mm-hmm.
A very difficult start, a tough watch from the beginning. A little blunder.
Mm-hmm.
Canada goes down. It just felt out of reach until that second half, which we'll get into, but that's it. No points, no results, one goal.
Only other team to not earn a result was the team that got there based on hosting the event.
That is correct.
So not a great showing, obviously, in terms of like the results for Canada.
Canada.
I think you can spin this a positive as much as you want, but let's start. You want to start with the game?
I just have one more stat.
Okay.
Canada's record of 6 defeats from 6 matches over the World Cup history ties in with El Salvador for the worst record ever in tournament history.
Mm.
100% loss rate.
That's tough. How many games does El Salvador have? Do you have that?
Doesn't matter.
I feel like they've been there more. Maybe I'm
sounds
wrong.
Like they would have been.
So maybe there's
nonetheless,
still worse.
Nonetheless, there's only 2 teams in the history of the World Cup. In the history of the World Cup. How
that
long has the World Cup been going
match.
On for?
Long time. It's every 4 years, so it's not like we've seen a million of them, but probably 25 World Cups, 20 World Cups.
I'm going to take a look. Nonetheless, Canada now owns a very sad record.
Yeah, so, you know.
92 years ago, it was founded. Wow.
92 divided by 4, quick math, not quite 20. Okay, so the game's
23.
Okay.
God, I think our math on this show.
I said between 20 and 25, and you couldn't just leave it there?
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm awful at math, Justin. I think every single time I've tried to say a stat or a quick mental math, I've failed.
And yet we always have to get the exact numbers so that we can tell each other
how wrong
we are.
No, you know why? Because the people in the text line immediately be like, it's 23, Justin. You're a moron.
Okay, that's great.
So I avoid.
I said between 20 and 25.
I understand.
Got it right.
And I'm giving you full credit for being in the range.
Okay, so the worst team ever at the World Cup tied with El Salvador. I mean, it doesn't feel like that necessarily. Like, they're kind of, you know, they earned some respect on the world stage this time. But when it comes to the game, like, it kind of was over before it started.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost clawed back between inches of having an equalizer, having a huge moment, especially with Atiba Hutchinson and his 101st cap. That would be an amazing farewell for one of the pioneers of this game. But they put themselves in a position where they basically had no chance. And it was errors, but it was also, like, the attitude and the will and the display of, like, determination that we didn't see. Like, that first half was
uninspiring,
really tough to watch, really hard to watch. Like, if it was just that for 90 minutes, I would have felt like, oh, that stat is, you know, good. They deserve that stat. They deserve all the negative things that come from, you know, not performing on the World Cup stage, because you could take solace in the fact that you got there, but we'd probably focus more on what you did once you got there because it was so bad. They looked completely disorganized. You could be all over John Herdman because it looked like when they had the ball, they had no idea what to do with it. Like, it was almost as though they had a plan and then they saw something different and they had no idea how to adapt. You saw guys looking around, having the ball at their feet, looking around with time and mm-hmm. not knowing where to go with it. Nothing. No inspiration, no idea, no imagination. Nothing was there for Canada.
Yesterday when
in the first half,
we teed up what we wanted in the last bookend of our show.
Mm-hmm. There it is again.
I think that I was, my little checklist was come out strong and play with some pride to get a result in this game, because that was part of the want, I think, as a fan base, that you could find a way to leave on a positive note. There was a lack of that in the first half of the game.
What I thought you were going to say is that we wanted to see when something changes,
that was
how do you react?
The second part of what my wish list was either get up and hold the lead and be able to adjust, or if you find your way down in the game, turn it on. Find a way to
just be like Mexico and just throw everything
exactly.
at them. It doesn't matter if you give up a goal. Just try. Just like be ambitious. Do something that you're capable of doing. Like, how many amazing highlights did we see of Alphonso Davies during the lead up?
Mm-hmm.
How many goals Kyle Larin scored, Jonathan David scored? All this stuff. Like, just force it a little bit more and give yourselves a moment, some happiness, some peace that you performed at the World Cup stage.
Like,
some
leave it
moment,
all out there.
Leave it all out there. That's the perfect
way
to put
it. Leave it all out there.
And you're watching that first half, and they're not even, it looked like they weren't even trying. It looked like they were scared to do anything.
Like, the moment
it was
too big.
Scared to give up a goal, moment too big, all of that.
Oh, no, we're going to get blown out here in our final game. We're going to choke up. We're going to feel like we don't remember, you know, what our strategy is, that this one blip, unfortunately, just changed the whole outcome of how you're performing.
And that's when the goal was scored, when Boyan gave away the ball, like, just awful.
Oh,
and just, yeah. I actually thought for a second, this could be okay, because at least Morocco, knowing it just needs a result, will sit back a little bit. Maybe Canada will be like, well, we already made the mistake, so let's go for it. And we didn't see that right away. They were so fortunate to get that one goal. Like, the only decent run of play the entire first half results in an own goal for Morocco. So that was like a gift from the heavens.
It was actually.
But what was really disheartening about the first half was that they had that moment, they had the change in game state, and it looked like they were devolved into something even worse. It looked like it was going to be no response. It looked like they had nothing. It looked like even though the team was up, they felt so comfortable in the match that they would just do whatever they wanted the entire time. But the second half starts, Herdman does make a change, and the score effects kind of help, so it seems a little bit artificial the second half, just a little bit.
Well,
because Morocco stopped
up.
Playing. Yeah. They started
to
shell
up. But that's
when
you capitalize.
But that's when you at least look good. So it like starts 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, we're finding solace here and at least some possession. But then once they actually possessed the ball for a little while, saw that some good things were happening, and realize that, you know, maybe Morocco's not going to hit us on the counterattack like crazy if we make a mistake here. Maybe they did make mistakes. They didn't get punished for them. And they're like, okay, I feel a little bit more comfortable. They went after it. It looked a little bit more like Mexico in the second half when they needed four goals to get in or whatever it was. It looked like other teams that had nothing to play for and could just play freely. It looked a little bit more like that. And Canada, using that sort of mindset, at least what I'm projecting onto them, was able to turn in a really, really encouraging second half. Like, they were really good. You could be proud of what they did in the second half.
Which is a great way to end your World Cup. But I also feel like it...
You still didn't get the goal.
It sucks a bit more because why didn't you just do that for the full game?
Yeah. And part of it is tactics.
You had 100%. We'll get into lineup and tactics. Yeah. But you had it in you. It took... I don't know what happened at halftime there to inspire the team. But if you were able to do that for almost half a game, where was that for the first half? Like, that's kind of the unfortunate spin on it as well. Is yes, it was great to see a push. It was great to be motivated that this team wanted something and could play at that world stage to wrap things up. But, I mean, it would have been great to have that for an entire game because the result would have been different, I think.
And I still don't think we saw, like, we didn't see Davies ever get the ball in space and run and look like the athlete he is. We saw moments from Tajon Buchanan, I guess, but it still lacked that, okay, we got athletes on this team. Let's showcase it. Mm-hmm. And part of it was because what Morocco did so well. They were just behind the ball. And you can have the ball when the other team is just choosing to be behind the ball. And that's a lot of what we saw. But with that pressure and with a little bit more and inching closer and closer, they did earn free kicks. The free kicks were better. Junior Hoylett was really good in the game. They got stuff on corners and free kicks. They had chances. Atiba's chance off the bar happened with a set piece. So just the pressure allowed them to settle in and be a little bit more authentically themselves. It still didn't feel all that real, though, because it came against a team that was just like, okay, we're not going to let you do what you're really good at, which is have Davies run in space and have David freed up and hit you on the counterattack. Like, they just didn't let you have that. And really, that's, I think, the story of the World Cup from Canada is, like, they were a little too one note. They were a little too predictable, a little too easy to figure out. And all the, once they saw it versus Belgium, Croatia and Morocco were just like, okay, we kind of know what, how you guys tick. We kind of know what you do well and what you don't do well. And these simple adjustments we're going to make, going to make life pretty miserable on you.
So right before the end of the show yesterday, the lineup was announced and we had about 3 minutes to react. And I think there's a little bit of surprise with the way that Herdman decided to kick off this final bookend to Canada's match. And
bookend.
And I'm going to see how many times I can fit it in now. It seemed to be the main factor to why that game started off poorly.
Well, yeah.
Questionable.
I mean, the Borjan mistake was big.
I understand
big,
that.
Big. But their inability to, like, find themselves in the game, I think, based on the lineup decisions, I think we can make that inference.
Is this another question about John Herdman and the way he decided to go about this World Cup? Not that I want to pile on him, but these are just statistical factors that, you know, there is this and then there's that and then there's this. And then now you're ending your tournament with lineup decisions that obviously, and looking backwards, interesting decision. If they had won or had started the game more positively, we'd be like praising him, obviously, for his creativity. But that's not the way it went. So you just have to look at how you put your team in the position and what happened.
I think it's two things. I think Marc-Anthony Kay was clearly drowning out there. And that was the big sticking point. I think if there was one, like, what decision with the lineup, it was Marc-Anthony Kay over whoever, whether it was Kone or Atiba Hutchinson. But I think the other part of it is the depth was just shot, right? It wouldn't have been him. It would have been Steven Eustachio, and you would have been fine. But I feel like Atiba Hutchinson only had, like, two good 45-minute halves in him. Maybe three. Maybe he had the full 90 minutes against Belgium. But he had nothing versus Croatia because this is a 39-year-old who's barely played soccer, who's all of a sudden has to play three games in, what, 9 days? Someone can check me on that. But, like, that's a lot of soccer. Usually you play once a week when you're in the throes of a season, maybe twice a week with a league match, but you'll have other substitutes in the depth dealing with that. Like, it's a lot on a 39-year-old to play at that high of a level, three matches in such short time. But when he came onto the pitch, we saw his value. James Sharman told us he was the most important player to any team at the World Cup. And when you saw full strength Atiba in 45 minutes where he just had to harness that, you were like, why did he sit on the bench to start this game? And Marc-Anthony Kay, who was struggling every time he was near the ball, was picked over him. But I feel like that's all you had. You only had 45 minutes of Atiba.
And also,
should it not have been the first 45 minutes, though?
It should have.
Like, you start on the front foot, right? Mm-hmm. Atiba starts that game. Maybe you settle in. Maybe you still make that mistake if you're Borjan. Maybe it doesn't happen because the game would be different. But yeah, maybe he didn't know he had those 45 minutes from Atiba. Maybe Atiba Hutchinson didn't know he had those 45 minutes. But when he came on, he was brilliant. He changed the game dramatically. And again, Morocco was sitting back. So what hurt Atiba against Croatia was like, okay, Croatia was in the game and they were just trying to find a way to make life miserable on him. I guess it was a little easier for Atiba when the game state was what it was. But again, all these things are connected. And one player looked like a stud out there, the 39-year-old who almost scored the equalizer. And then Marc-Anthony Kay didn't look like he belonged.
He's got a little Giordano in him.
Yeah, little Giordano. short spurts.
Okay, so of course you have to think. Having the start that you have, I'm sure, is a difficult way to rebound. There's the lack of that experience we've talked about being at the world stage, whether it's players, coaching, fans, media. We've seen that all. That's a way to evaluate this World Cup. I think maybe we learned a lot about the depth that Canada had. I just think that simply they don't have this caliber players that any of these teams have. And maybe we looked a lot into CONCACAF and got really fired up about how good Canada looked against some of these teams, mm-hmm. you know, top of their table.
A more North American style thriving. That's another thing.
Like, and then you
okay,
come
so
in,
you're playing a more global style and it's different and you don't know how to adjust. The adjustments were the problem.
And so you come in and I think rightfully so, we had high expectations and an excitement around Canada. How could you not? It was the first World Cup in 36 years. They looked good against the competition they played against. And they came here and they had to play against the best of the best. And they weren't able to get a result. And I think you can feel multiple ways about this. You can feel slight disappointment or maybe more in the decisions that the coach made. You could feel humbled a bit that your caliber of players just simply aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
You could feel slighted about the maybe the group that they are in, which is difficult when you look at Mexico and United States, who had a little bit of a better draw, and you know they had a more successful World Cup. You could feel maybe embarrassed that your team now shares the worst record. And I know it's 6 games total, but you know,
23 total World Cups.
Qatar and you were the worst two teams at the tournament. You could feel a sense of pride, which I certainly do still, and now a sense of anticipation for what happens next. Like, I feel like it's totally justified to feel many emotions this morning, moving forward, and how you grow from this moment. That's now the biggest eyes are on Canada soccer. Very important to change the way that you prepared for this World Cup for the next one.
One quick point on the CONCACAF thing. I think the difference between Canada and the others is that the strengths and weaknesses for Canada are so that, okay, the mistakes are exploitable and the strengths are easier to shut down. Easier to shut down good offense in pretty much any sport, right? Like, you think about, well, maybe not football, but at least in soccer, like, Morocco could just change things to dial in to a couple players that were the strengths that might hurt you, whereas if your strength is in the back line, you can hang on, right? You can hang on for long periods of time. Like, take the USA. They don't have a Jonathan David. They don't have an Alphonso Davies. I guess they have a Tejon Buchanan-style guy, but they don't have, I don't think, the same dynamism up front. However, what they do have is some pretty good talent in the midfield. Some players who play in big spots that are in charge of the central defense. And when you look at Canada, they have those players up front. They have, like, the showy glass case items that you're wow, mm-hmm. look at Canada. Wow, look at that player. Bayern Munich, that's nice. But what they don't have is the stuff that's like the spine of your soccer team, which would be a really world-class keeper. I think Milan Boyan had a really, really tough tournament. Steven Vitoria is one of their center backs who was exposed in this game big time. Part of that mistake.
Jonathan David
was... That's the middle of your defense.
Non-existent.
Well, he didn't play. He didn't start the game. But that's the striker. Mm-hmm. But central mid, they don't have. They didn't have the depth, the Atiba. Fatigued or whatever, Eustachio banged up. Like, the real important stuff that keeps everything together, the skeleton of your team or the spine of your team in the skeleton, they don't have. Other CONCACAF teams have that. What they don't have is Davies. But like we saw in that game, you can kind of take Davies out of the equation. So I feel like that's kind of the problem they ran into. Better group and then maybe a less transferable style or less transferable roster or skill set. I think that's maybe one of the explanations for CONCACAF. As for moving forward, I kind of fear the next 4 years. There's a lot of hopeful people, you know, that are hopeful, and why wouldn't you be? These guys had a taste on the World Cup stage, guaranteed to get there next year. I don't actually like that they're guaranteed to get there next time.
Yeah, I agree.
I kind of like earn it.
It's
in
like
the
getting
dirt.
A bye in any other sport, and you just you let up. And
were the Qataris prepared for this World Cup? Getting the automatic pass is not necessarily the greatest thing. And they don't even have to go through qualifying. Qualifying is where they found themselves over the qualification process. They proved that they were a great team. They proved that they deserve to be there for sure, but they also grew. They evolved. They became something. If you're not involved in that process, well, it's another excuse to not pour money in because it's like, oh, we're there. We're what?
That's
what?
True.
We're good. We're fine. So where is the inspiration going to come? Yeah, you're there and you have to perform. There should be inspiration from the failure, but
that's the only way.
Do you really have to do anything?
And that's the
do you
only
have
way
to go that
you're
extra mile?
Kind of drawing this inspiration right now.
So I'm concerned for multiple reasons. I'm concerned they don't have to qualify themselves. I'm concerned that, you know, the players in Canada Soccer don't see eye to eye. I'm concerned that they only got $10 million. And where's that money going to go? There are a lot of things that concern me. I think we're just assuming that they're going to get better players and they're going to be better and there's going to be a lot of development. Well, guess what? They were leaning on a lot of older guys. And is that next wave for sure coming up? Or is this just a window where it's like, hey, we caught something here with some world-class players and some at the tail end of their careers that were able to hang on and get us there. And it was just this like perfect moment in time. I don't know if there's another wave coming for sure. I think we're just assuming there's another wave coming for sure.
Well, I think we're really hopeful that
we're hopeful.
Look at that the roster
and the
put out
Carter
now.
Expect, like it should help, but is it going to help in time for 4 years? I don't know. I don't know that for sure. So we'll ask Christian Jack about that later.
Yeah, we'll have Christian Jack on. We're going to have Sam Cosentino and obviously Charles Davis. That's our lineup for today. I'd like to open up the text line at 590-590 because now we can really evaluate Canada's performance at the World Cup. Your expectations coming in, was it met? Where's your source of pride? Are you left with a little bit of uneasy feelings moving forward? I just want to know what the fans think. And I'll say there's a little bit of a positive, not even little. I think that so many people turn their eyes to the World Cup that never had before and to Canada soccer in general. I mean, Canadian women's team hopefully started this enough for fans to get into Canada soccer. Like they deserve a lot of credit for being the pioneers of this program. Mm-hmm. And now people obviously want to watch the men's team at the World Cup. So I think that's a positive just in terms of the fact that there's way more eyes on this team, but that's also a reason to make this a stepping stone and a huge leap forward because you don't want to get embarrassed when you're hosting the World Cup in 4 years. Like if this is the performance in 4 years, I will have completely different expectations for this team in 4 years. Like I don't want to just have one goal and no result. Like that's not acceptable in 4 years. So this is why more people care about Canada soccer now, but that means you need to deliver. So I just think it's interesting just in a positive that this allowed for way more fans, but with way more fans, more eyes, more media coverage, more expectations moving forward.
And there should be no excuses. It should be an easier draw. There's 48 teams. There'll be the pool gets a little less saturated with talent. Like they should be a pretty average team based on projection and based on who's going to be there next time. Our producer, Austin Mackey, does point out that they will still play in CONCACAF, but there's only two spots. It's just it will be different, right?
Yeah.
Will be different if you're there. Is Alphonso Davies flying to Jamaica from Bayern Munich or Real Madrid if he goes there to make that match? I know he wasn't involved in every match this time, but when you're there, you don't have to be the same way. So it will be different. It'll take on a different tone. And that's why getting to a tournament like Copa America in 2024 would be, I think, more important because you're seeing elite teams. You're seeing Brazil, Argentina. That would be more meaningful, at least to me. I worry that they can kind of just ease their way through CONCACAF. I will say, though, you mentioned Herdman, the women's team. I think naturally we have to end out with Herdman. And someone said, I don't know if it was on our show or a different show the day we were at Cafe Diplomatico.
But Cafe Diplomatico is just a blur.
Yeah, it was.
Buckets
it was a blur.
Of beer.
Someone said that Canada doesn't need a master tactician right now. And then so I've been thinking about that the whole time. And I was like, in the first half, is like, okay, we needed a tactician, right? We needed a tactic. But this is someone who has been linked to other moves, or at least the idea that he wants to be back in England one day. Can he wait 4 years? Is it awful if he stays? Is it awful if he goes? Like, I don't know. I don't know exactly how this is all going to play out, but it seems imperative that the recruiting process is just as important as anything else. And maybe, though, when you are on the World Cup stage, if Carlo Ancelotti wants to coach this team, a world-class manager who's done it at all levels, international stage, a tactician, a master tactician, would he be better at the tournament? Is Herdman the guy to get you there? and then someone else has to carry it over the line. I don't really know.
And who else is, like, who's coming up the pipe? Like, I don't know.
That's the thing. Part of this thing is going to be about recruitment, going out there and selling players on the idea of Canada that have some sort of...
Finding hidden talent, finding dual national players.
Yeah.
That want to come to Canada.
So that, like, does that make you feel like everything's going to be rosy in 4 years automatically when it's like we've got to unearth players that feel maybe, you know, like they're not going to get the proper chance from a different country? Like, that's...
Like the keeper in that yesterday.
A lot of that is just hopeful, like crossing your fingers.
Was born in Montreal.
Yeah, that was a guy that they let go.
Would have been nice to...
And he looked better than Milan Borjan yesterday. But, like, that's why it just doesn't seem like a guarantee to me. And I think one of the sort of things, or the easy narratives is like, oh, we'll be better in 4 years. This was just getting experience. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work out that way. They have to be all in. They have to do everything right. They have to make the right decision around Herdman. Herdman's got to, you know, commit if he's going to commit. There's a lot of things. The money's the forefront of all of that.
And
all of this is going
to
cost money.
Because it's, I know it's 4 years away, but you don't get to take a year of thinking
no,
about it.
You got to get in the Copa America, like, right now.
It really doesn't stop. We were talking about it.
It's going to slip from our consciousness a little bit, but it can't stop. They have to be doing everything in their power over the next 4 years to be ready for the 4 years, because assuming you're ready, you're not going to be ready.
Text in at 59590. We got a couple here about your thoughts and feelings going into, you know, the rest of this World Cup, which Canada won't be partaking in, and then the next 4 years. Hot take, Canada would have lost to Qatar. Next text in from the same individual. Every CONCACAF team won or made a game out of it and made it interesting except for Canada. It's not good that they don't have to qualify for the next cup. For some reason, Canada's attitude is like they had been there before, which was not good. I like Herdman, but I'm surprised he made so many mistakes in this World Cup.
I'm also surprised.
Oh.
I've never heard that.
Whoa, I didn't know we had that
I'm also surprised he made a lot of mistakes, too. But I think a context is important with CONCACAF. Like, yeah, Canada was the worst performing. They also did win CONCACAF on merit.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's just the different competition, and it kind of... It didn't go Canada's way in that sense. And it just shows you, though, that there are areas you have to improve. Like, who's the next center back coming? Who's replacing Steven Vitoria? We don't have a name.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we're assuming we're going to be better in 4 years. We don't have a name to play in the middle of our defense, but we're assuming we're going to be better. Like, we have to do a lot. And just to rest on our laurels, we're going to have a disaster in 4 years if we rest on our laurels.
Melissa from Ajax with two texts in here. Considering Canada only lost to Belgium because of a ref who was later suspended due to not calling fouls, isn't really a failure. Belgium shouldn't count as it was out of their hands as to why they didn't win or tie. Next text. Another big problem was coaching. Wrong players in the wrong place in the wrong format. They didn't adjust when they realized their formation was wrong. I was more disappointed in the coaching rather than the players.
I think that's fair. I don't think it's a failure.
I never want to say that it was a failure.
I think it sucks that you're with El Salvador, right? Like, it sucks that you're 0-6 on the World Cup stage.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks Belgium didn't go your way. It sucks that the other two teams got a read on you based on a game which you dominated but didn't get anything out of.
And it sucks that other teams that you were compared against did more and had a better showing. Like, I don't want to compare myself to the United States or Mexico, but you have to.
States are in the quarterfinals. Mexico had maybe the most thrilling 45 minutes I've seen of the entire World Cup. Costa Rica almost beat Germany yesterday, beat a team that's going through.
The Socceroos.
Not in CONCACAF, but the Socceroos got something too. Everybody else got something out of it.
Saudi Arabia beat Argentina.
Exactly. Even Saudi Arabia.
Qatar weren't expected to have their moments.
Everyone had a moment but Canada. And our moment was, oh, you should have beat Belgium, which sucks. It sucks when your moment's a should have been. But there are things to take from it. But my biggest thing to take from it is we can't mess around. Mm-hmm. We have to be at an institutional level impeccable over the next 4 years. And we have trust in them to do that. I don't know.
Text in here for everybody, Giacomo in Windsor, who texts in every single morning at 6 a.m. and says good morning to us, by the way. I know you don't look at the text line, but...
Oh, yeah, Giacomo.
He's very lovely.
That's your domain.
He also said, tell Justin his mustache is top notch. Not many people can grow it like he can. But his text in about the World Cup was, for the first time in the World Cup in 36 years, I'm satisfied at best with our performance. But there's a lot of work to do on the pitch and maybe even more work to do off the pitch when it comes to getting real pros to run Soccer Canada.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I'm kind of fearful. I'm hopeful, but I'm fearful.
John from EG here. I think the key to success in the next World Cup is putting money into infrastructure across Canada's and finding an employer identification. This country is so vast. There's little players that are going to be greats all over the place, but we have no way of identifying those players and funneling them up to the national team. That's the key right there.
And here's the thing. There should be every incentive for those who actually can make a difference with what we're talking about. We know the TV numbers were crazy. We know the interest was off the charts.
Travel.
Everything was
money
there.
Money that came into Qatar. There.
Marketing spend. Everybody wanted a piece of this. Everybody wanted a piece. So see that it's a worthy investment and do what you need to do. Do what a world-class organization would do. And if you don't do that, you're not going to hang out and compete with other world-class organizations. That's just facts.
I mean, I listened to a kick in the grass after every post game over the World Cup and pregame stuff. Jeff Blair kept honing into this point that you need to play better teams and you might need to dish out some money to have those teams come here. Like, you need to be able to spend money and play hard teams and have, hey, Belgium, you want to come here and play? Well, we'll foot the bill. We need to find a way to put money into this. We need to go into boardrooms and get sponsors and, like, that's stuff you don't think about when you're just like, oh, we need better players. Well, there's more than just getting better players.
This is a financial race in a lot of ways. A
couple more and then, I don't know, we'll just talk about something else. Only our current alternative is finding dual nationals who want to play for Canada because I don't think they're going to get a fair shake at any other country. Not a great way to go about future success if you're trying to find it elsewhere instead of here at home.
Now, 8 years. You want to talk 8 years after this?
That's a different story.
After hosting a World Cup? Like, then, I think kids playing in the schoolyard right now are going to be ready by then. But to expect this, like, expedited development in 4 years is, like, it's going to take creativity to be really good next time. And the next time out is the time out that's on home soil.
Morocco has 15 first-tier players. Canada has 2. It might take a few World Cups to get here. It's a very similar line of thinking. Lucas McNaughton from TFC is an amazing Canadian defender who will be there at the next World Cup.
Okay, someone to keep an eye on. He's got to be better than Stephen Vittori if they're going to have a chance to compete.
Keep it coming at 590, 590. Love your show. Love both of you. One word, cumin. Math is easy. There's only one answer.
Cumin?
Cumin.
I didn't have cumin. I did have a biology tutor, though, when things went south there.
Jordan and Sago. He's feeling less positive this morning.
Okay.
Embarrassed by the Team Canada performance and Herdman's self-promoting. Only positive was the qualification process. Other than that, complete failure. On to Charles Davis.
I will. You got to wait for 8 o'clock for that. I will say, though, I think maybe the first step. I want to ask KJ what the first domino is, but I feel like what? What the
that
first?
That sounded weird in my ears. I don't know what happened.
Oh,
you didn't hear that?
Okay. My voice inflection there. The first domino is sorting things out with the players. Why does Alphonso Davies have the only name, image, and likeness agreement? Like, let's make sure we're treating these players like they would anywhere else. If we're competing for dual nationals and one team is going to give you money for every jersey
that's
sold
right,
and the other's not, where are you going to go? It should not be only Alphonso Davies getting money for jersey sales. Every single player on this team should be getting money for jersey sales. I think that's the first order of business. Let's do things correctly here. We saw what could happen. We saw the power of this tournament. We saw the power of interest in this tournament. Let's start doing things the right way.
Talk about jumping off the bandwagon. Were you expecting Canada to win the World Cup? Maybe the Argos could win the Super Bowl. Okay, never.
I don't know how that's a relevant conversation or talking point.
Ideally, you want Davies playing his original position, but we don't have anyone else to play mid or striker.
Well, talk about the tactical things. Davies was deployed in 3 different ways this World Cup.
He was just hybrid central.
I don't think Davies had a great World Cup. I don't. I don't think he was he's not what we see at Bayern Munich. He's not what we saw in the limited qualification he had. But part of that reason is because he's got to do a different thing every day. Mm-hmm. Just play him to his strength. Even if that means he's playing fullback position, like he does at Bayern Munich, for Canada one day. It's okay if he's just dominating one side of the pitch. Got other guys to score goals. Jonathan David, again, did not start. Partly because you're playing Alphonso Davies in a position he doesn't normally play.
We had a text in here, but how does it relate to the Leafs? And I responded, can't make it past the first round either.
I think the unfortunate thing is it was kind of leafy.
Oh, no. Everything comes back to the Leafs. Keep it coming at 590. Let's just pivot a little bit to Elliot Friedman talking about those Toronto Maple Leafs that we mentioned. There's going to be a lot of thought about the deadline strategy for the Leafs, and it's still a little bit of a ways away, but we've already floated the idea that they should be looking for a defenseman, and that's when they were down Muzzin and Riley and Brody, and we've kind of dried up that conversation because of the way that the back end and the forwards have really honed in on their defensive game. But nonetheless, there's going to be thoughts. Where is this team at the deadline? Is it time to go all in, get Patrick Kane? It's time to get Erik Karlsson. Like, we're going to have those discussions. Elliot was on the J.D. Bunkus podcast yesterday, and he had also wrote an article on his 32 thoughts, which you can get, of course, on sportsnet.ca, about the Leafs' needs. And I think it's an interesting perspective right now, December 2nd, and see how we feel in a month or two.
I think they'd like somebody with an edge. I think they would. Look, I think the best defenseman is what they'll try to do, I think. But I think there is a preference that that's somebody with a bit of edge to them. Mm. You know, one of the guys that I really wanted about, and they saw him firsthand in the bubble, was Gavrikov. Mm-hmm. That's a guy that I've really kind of wondered if he's very high up on their list. But, you know, also, like, handedness is going to be a factor, too. You know, what do they decide they need? But I think they would like somebody with a bit of nastiness to them. You know, the playoffs are a nasty place. And a lot of the teams that win, you know, Tampa's got a lot of skill, but they're mean. Colorado's got a lot of skill, but they're mean. And you have to be both in this league. You have to be skilled, and you have to be mean.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that take, even though it's maybe not a take. It's more the information he's gleaning. But, you know, I think there was maybe a change in, slight changes in philosophy we've seen. Like, why not just embrace what you're good at? Why not just go all in from the offensive perspective? Why not lean on these forwards to play the defense that they've been playing? Why do you have to strength of your defensive game have to be the blue line? We have to snap back to reality, which is playoff hockey, which is play differently, which... You cannot rely on your forwards being diligent defensively to win hockey games when games are 2-1 and it goes in and off a shin pad more often than not because there's a battle between six guys in front of the net. Like, that's just how it goes in the playoffs. And I think if you can get that sort of player who gives you some grittiness but, like, some pretty steady minutes and it's cheap, maybe you can still get the forward. Mm-hmm. Like, they have some chips. Like, Kerfoot's not finding himself. Can you parlay him?
Even last year, Kerfoot.
Yeah, but can you? It's $3.5 million. So there's like, it's there. Mm-hmm. If you want to bring in someone, there's the money that could potentially ship out for at least an upgrade into a certain situation. I do worry about the idea of like, okay, let's only address the blue line because we got Matthew Nyes coming up.
See, that's one.
It's
point
like,
I
are we just
to...
we're just assuming he's going to be what they are missing, and I just don't know if that's reality.
He wrote that in the article on 32 Thoughts. Quote: They have time to play this out, but it's safe to say they'll save their best assets for whatever they feel they might need on the blue line. There's a possibility of adding a left shot scorer, but that's not the priority. And I think they'd like to show Matthew Nyes there's a path when he's ready to leave Minnesota.
What a tough look that would be for Nick Robertson if it's just like, hey, show up after my college season and I'm stepping right into
that second line
left winger position.
No doubt.
But that's just the reality though. I mean, Nick Robertson hasn't earned it yet. I don't think Matthew Nyes has earned it yet, but I just think you're banking on a little bit, and if you can improve that, if you can turn Kerfoot into someone who makes more sense from a postseason perspective, from a scoring perspective, from a grit and toughness perspective, like if there's someone that checks off those boxes, $3.5 million there, Muzzin's money, a cheaper defenseman coming in, perhaps at least more inexpensive compared to Muzzin, then maybe there's the opportunity to do both.
There's a lot of expectation and pressure on Matthew Nyes to just seamlessly come in from NCAA into the NHL at the most important time in the hottest market.
It didn't work with Nick Robertson.
To have playoff performance on a team that is desperately needing so with jobs on the line. But maybe they see that in him.
And we saw last year, what was the difference? A Nick Paul type was the difference.
That's right. Something to ponder. Send in your wake and rake picks. We're going to take a break. Tonight you have Raptors at the Nets. Feel like they play them every second week.
Sick of the Nets.
We have them tonight. And then obviously some World Cup to tee up. We're going to take a break and we're going to do the A-List. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Patrick Mahomes has become the face of this Kansas City Chiefs team for many, many years to come. The iconic superstar, the legend. But he revealed some interesting information about his 2017 NFL draft. This was yesterday on an appearance on New Heights, a podcast hosted by Travis and Jason Kelsey. He kind of goes in depth about the process of getting drafted. I wonder your thoughts on this audio clip.
The first day that I met Coach Reed was at the facility. We had like the meetings, like the top 30 visits. So I was in there for like 5 hours. He's just going drilled. Through plays, going through plays. And I'm going to give you all the inside scoop. Matt Nagy, who was the offensive coordinator then, he really liked me. So he gave me the plays they were going to go over the night before. So Coach Reed's finding out here live on New Heights podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Matt Nagy. How could you?
Let's go.
And yeah, so of course I crushed the meeting. I stayed up all night studying those plays.
It's like, man, this kid is locked in. We got ourselves a winner here.
As the process went on, I got a feeling that I was kind of going up in the draft. I had a couple of teams that said they were going to draft me, and I mean, that's true. Like, it's not like these coaches are making that up. I talked to them during the draft process, and they were like, hey, if you're there, we're gonna take you. I kind of gave a little inside info to the Chiefs, and was like, hey, if y'all let me go anywhere below – at the time, I didn't know about the Saints, but I was like, if y'all let me go 12 or below, I'm going to get drafted by someone else.
You drafted yourself?
So I gave the Chiefs a little bit of info on that because I wanted to be here.
Let's go.
Listen, it didn't work out for Matt Nagy as a head coach in the NFL, but he should live forever in Kansas City Chiefs lore for that little bit of, I don't even know what to call it, circumvention. I don't know exactly what you want to label that as.
Insider trading.
Insider trading, a little insider information. That is as important
of a decision.
Of a power move or decision.
A slipping of a paper across the table.
That you could ever have. Shout out to Matt Nagy.
He literally changed the
future of that
organization.
What's he doing right now? Did they rehire him? They should have rehired him after he left, came back. I don't know what he's doing right now. I think he's back with Kansas City. You're darn right he's back with Kansas City. That's why.
He's a senior assistant and quarterback coach for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Quarterback coach for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, yeah, he is.
I mean, he earned that, though. He earned that. Not the right way. He earned that the wrong way, but he earned it.
Is there, like, a penalty? Like, I guess there's no... Is there a penalty for this?
Do whatever you want.
Wow.
Well, maybe. I don't know the rules around like the interview process.
I truly couldn't tell you that.
You can't talk to them before you talk to them. I have no idea.
But imagine being another QB that's in this tryout, and you're like, what the hell? How is this guy? Like, this guy knows everything. You're like, I'm just not even close to being at this caliber. No wonder he's had the cheat sheet the night before. He comes in looking like an absolute stud, but imagine he was a bust.
He earned himself
after
lifetime.
This.
Well, it was a big risk, I guess.
Oh, big time.
But he earned himself lifetime employment with this. Forever trust with Andy Reid. Like, Andy Reid owes him everything. Matt Nagy. That's
what a
redemption story.
What a guy. All right, let's get into today's soccer report brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way.
Okay, so it's the final day of the group stage, and I think there's like a little bit less intrigue, at least compared to the last 2 days,
yesterday was another incredible day.
Costa Rica was going through with Japan for like 5 minutes there. Spain and Germany were both going to be out, both going to lose to Japan and Costa Rica in that moment, but also not going to move on at the World Cup. But Spain does manage to get through because Germany comes back to beat Costa Rica. You talk about everything affecting everything else. Just insane. It's insanity. Nothing like the World Cup. It could happen again today. Could be wild again today. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's going to be kind of simple, though, because really what it comes down to, Serbia's got to beat Switzerland. to be the European side that goes through with Brazil in Group G. And then in Group H, Uruguay is sort of in the same position as Serbia in that they need to win. They need to beat Ghana to come from last to qualify alongside with Portugal. But really, these two groups, kind of haves and have-nots. Like, it's Portugal and Brazil, and then kind of everybody else fighting for the scraps. Portugal and Brazil look really good. We'll see if it's Serbia or Switzerland in Group G, and if it's Uruguay or Ghana. I guess South Korea could also get in there, but it seems a little bit more cut and dry, but then I shouldn't say that. It'll probably be nuts again, and we'll see a team like Costa Rica, the equivalent to Costa Rica, for 5 minutes put themselves in a position to get through. So looking forward to the final day of the group stage at the World Cup later on today. This soccer report was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way.
Two of my teams from my pool are playing each other today, Ghana and Uruguay. It's tough.
It's okay. One of them gets in for sure.
And
you're
so
actually,
you have,
well, not for sure, but you're in a good spot.
You have Switzerland. And you have, so right now you have Japan and England going through.
Yeah.
I have Netherlands and Senegal going through. And
Brazil's basically guaranteed.
Oh.
So you're going to have four through. I could also have four, but it's likely that I have either two or three. And one of them being Japan, who's going to be pretty
quick. Japan's a little.
They're plucky, man.
Spoiler team.
They are plucky. I mean, they beat Spain and Germany already, so maybe the sky's the limit for them. But it, you know, they won the group. Apparently, the stats show if you don't win the group,
you're screwed.
You cannot win the World Cup. Every team that's in 23 World Cups, every team that has won the World Cup, actually, I think the group stage was added on.
I'm sure it was different
at some point.
Then.
Yeah, at some point it was added on.
93 years ago.
But if you didn't win the group, you've never won a World Cup. So Japan's in that category. I guess Netherlands in that category for you.
No.
Brazil's in that category for you. England's in that category for me.
So Senegal is the only one that of my teams that can win.
Senegal was, they were second ranked. They play England, so that's, I mean, you could at least have one of your sleeper agents in Senegal beat my only hope, really, to
it's
beat
looking
you
good
bet.
For my bet, is
it
what
is
you're
looking
saying.
Very, and Brazil, the path is paved in gold for them.
But that's, you know what? Sometimes you got to fight tooth and nail to get there.
Sometimes, but if it's just about getting the furthest, the team that has a really easy path is probably... Maybe Japan could upset Brazil at some point. I think they might match up, but either way, it's looking for good for you, and it's looking entertaining at the World Cup. We have maybe our last discussion about Canada for at least a little bit here. After the break, with Christian Jack, one soccer analyst. He'll be live from Qatar after the break. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.